So it's July 22nd, 2019, Ljubljana, Slovenia, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, King Chitraketu's Lamentation. Text 55. Nahi kramascheri hamritu janmano. Anyone who has a book or a phone? Sharirinam astu tad atma karma bhi. Yasneha pasho nija sarga vridhaye. Swayam kritaste tamimam vivrishchasi. Indeed. Kramaha. Chronological order. Chet. If. Iha. In this material world. Mrityu. Of death. Janmano. And of birth. Saririnam. Of the conditioned souls who have accepted material bodies. Ashtu, let it be. Tat, that. Atma karma bihi, by the results of one's karma, fruit of activities. Yaha, that which. Sneha pashaha, bondage of affection. Nija sarga, your own creation. Vridhaye, to increase. Swayam, personally, krittaha, made, te, by you, tam, that, imam, this, vivrishchasi, you are cutting. Prabhupada's translation and purport. My Lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and that a son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruit of activity. However, if fruit of activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there is no need of a controller or God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruit of action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent. So we can see here Srila Prabhupada putting a lot of the commentary into the verse, something he does quite often. I mean, if we just look at the word for word, we see she's saying, indeed, if there's no rule about the order of birth and death, then everything's according to karma. But if that's the case, then doing everything according to karma would mean in your own creation, you will sometimes cut the ropes of affection. So that's basically all that's said in the Sanskrit. And Srila Prabhupada weaves his explanations often into the verses. So these are not just literal translations. And therefore, those who translate Prabhupada's books into other languages also have to be sensitive to the fact that this is a poem. You know, it's not just a manual for fixing a car. You know, it's a poetic narrative. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam, one who has taken to Krishna consciousness devotional service is not affected by the results of karma. In this verse, karma has been stressed on the basis of karma mimamsa philosophy, which says that one must act according to his karma and that a supreme controller must give the results of karma. The subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, Krishna says that one who can understand him and how he is acting controlling everything by subtle laws, immediately becomes freed by his grace. That is the statement of Brahma Samhita, Karmadi Nirjahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam. One should take to devotional service without reservations and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord that will make one happy in this life and the next. It's also quite interesting how this verse, the verse itself, is not really talking about surrender to Krishna, and Prabhupada brings it in his purport to that place. So, nahi kramas ched iha mrittu janmano saririnam astu tad atmakarma bihi yasne hapaso nijasarga vridhaye swayam kritaste tam imam vivishtasi. My dear Lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and that a son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruit of activity. However, if fruit of activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there is no need for a controller or God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruit of action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent. So the queen who was described a few verses earlier, Kritaduti, as being very intelligent, is here demonstrating her intelligence. Of course, she's not demonstrating supreme intelligence. In fact, no one in this story so far has demonstrated anything that we would call spiritual intelligence, not Chitraketu or Kritaduti or the other queens. And so here Kritaduti is, as we mentioned yesterday, blaming God for her misfortune. Now, if we look at the misfortune that has occurred, the death of the child, who could we say is responsible? Just looking at this story, who is responsible? Directly, the queens who poisoned the child. So they were the guilty party, and there's no excuse for their behavior. That no matter what goes on in life, we are not supposed to murder people, especially children. So there's simply no justification for their action. What caused them to murder the child? Yes, focusing on envy and anger and grief. So they were feeding their envy and anger and grief at their situation, and they were using logic, they used some logic, to rationalize or justify their focus on these emotions until the emotions became so strong that they lost all their intelligence. All right, what responsibility did Chitraketu have? He also had some responsibility for this situation. He was neglectful of his family that was under his care. And he's the king. He's supposed to take care even of the rabbits and the trees and the flowers in his kingdom. What to speak of all the human citizens? What to speak of the human citizens who are his family members? He married these women. Nobody forced him to do that. And he had this responsibility, and he didn't take care of it. So he was, the whole reason that he was having a son, the main reason the king must have an heir, is for the good of the kingdom. But he got so wrapped up in his familial affection for his son that he forgot the good of the kingdom. He neglected the very people that he was supposed to be taking care of. Now, we talked about that before, but we didn't talk about what responsibility Kritaduti herself had. And she's the one who's blaming God in yesterday's verse and today's verse. So what responsibility does she have here? What did she do wrong? She's the queen. She was considered the chief queen, the most intelligent queen. Are these also her family members? Yes. Yes? Did she make sure that they were happy? No. She was wrapped up in her own child and her own relationship with her husband, and she didn't make sure that these other people, she also has some responsibility for them, isn't it? Yes? Right? So we have all these people, Chitraketu, Kritaduti, the queens who poison the child, each of them is just simply absorbed in their own selfishness. None of them was thinking about the welfare of others. And of course, the queens who were the murderers were the most culpable. But here we see that Kritaduti is not looking in those places. She doesn't look at herself and say, oh, wow, I was absorbed selfishly in my own happiness, and I forgot about the happiness of others. And again, she's the queen. And she was the most qualified among the queens. So she certainly had the capacity to do this. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been the queen. Again, her responsibility is for all the citizens of the kingdom. She's considered the mother of the whole kingdom. And she didn't even take care of her own family members. So there's a big disqualification here of these government leaders. And she didn't think, she's not putting any responsibility here on herself. So this is quite typical when something bad happens to us that we immediately blame someone else. Of course, in this point, neither Kritaduti nor Chitraketu knew that the queens had murdered the child. They didn't know why the child had died. So they weren't blaming someone else in a criminal sense. They hadn't done their, forensic investigation yet to find out the cause of death. But she doesn't go inward. And I think this is quite typical, that when something happens to us, that instead of becoming introspective, we find somebody or something in our external environment to blame. And generally, we were talking about this yesterday, that we blame God or we blame someone who has some power given by God in our life. Our parents, our husband, our government, our employer, somebody who has some power over us. We put the blame on them. And of course, the devotee is supposed to become introspective. Tate nukampam sushamikshaman. The devotee is supposed to say, what is my role in this? And what is my lesson in this? And we find, of course, that Krishna many times in the lives of his devotees, if they're not acting properly, he does give them some kind of impetus to change their mentality. Yes? I mean, he does this all the time. This is his kindness. This is his kindness. Any of us who have responsibility for others, for training others and guiding others, we know that if those people are not acting properly, we need to change our dealings with them in order to rectify the situation. This is, the job of anyone who has a position of care or authority over others. And, if the king and queen can't take care of their own family members and are negligent of their own family and they're not even noticing, most likely they're not even noticing what's happening here, how are they going to take care of the kingdom? Like they say, charity begins at home. So there, and we see in tomorrow's verse, we'll look at that Kritaduti is focusing on the son for her benefit and Chitraketu's benefit rather than the real reason why the king needs to produce an heir, which is for the kingdom, not just for his own liberation. But we find here that the queen is certainly very intelligent, and so she's engaging in a very good debate with God. This verse reminds me of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how it's described that he was trained in debate. There's one lecture where Srila Prabhupada states that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was able to defeat Keshava Kashmiri because the Lord had been trained from childhood in debate. Now, of course, that's a little humorous because Lord Chaitanya is God, and therefore, of course, he can defeat anyone in debate. But this was part of a Vedic society, that high-class people were trained in logic and debate. And we see Queen Kritaduti is here very expert. So she's doing what Mahaprabhu did, described, I think it's by Vrindavan Das Thakur, that as a teacher, Lord Chaitanya would present an argument to his students, then he would defeat his own argument, then he would defeat his own defeat of his own argument. This is what Kritaduti is doing. So in yesterday's verse, she says that, my dear Lord, you are not very experienced because you've broken your own rule. Said you have a rule and you're breaking it. So what's the rule that she said that Krishna has broken? In yesterday's verse, she said Krishna broke a rule. What was that rule? That the son has to die after the father. That first the parents have to die and then the child dies. And I think most of us accept that this is the way things are supposed to be. You know, both of my parents have passed away. My two elder sisters have passed away. But I expected my parents to pass away. They were 89 years old. That's not so surprising. No one is surprised that their parents die within their lifetime, right? We expect this. It's still difficult, it's still painful, but it is expected. I don't expect to outlive my parents. I mean, I expect to outlive my parents. I don't expect my parents to outlive me. But one of my sisters died before my parents. So my sister died in 2000, and then my mother died in 2002, and my father in 2003, my other sister in 2004. And I remember when my middle sister died in 2000, she died of cancer. And as we were leaving the funeral, my father said to me, no one should ever have to bury their child. And my sister was already in her 60s at that time. But still, to have your child die before you, even if they've already lived a full life and they're already, I think she was 61, 62 years old, it's still very, very painful for a parent to see the child die. What to speak of if the child is a little child, is only like 2 years old. You know, it's just devastating. Huh? So we have this concept. You know, if our parents die in their old age, it's not so devastating. But if our child dies, it's very devastating. So she says, you've broken your rule, and so you don't know what you're doing. Then she says, in this verse, maybe it's not a rule. Okay. So the good debater anticipates the arguments for the other side. Krishna's doing this in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna also. He says, if you say the soul is always born and, you know, always dies, if you say there's no real soul, then why should you lament for the chemicals, right? So he gives different counter arguments. So here she's saying, all right, maybe there's not a rule. And we'd have to say there isn't a rule because children do die before their parents sometimes. It happens. Yes, I mean, it is something that happens. He says, all right, maybe the rule is not that there's a chronology, kramaha. Maybe the rule is not a time rule. Maybe the rule is a karma rule, that everyone gets the results of their karma. Maybe that's the rule. And indeed, again, we see that there is some fault on these people's behavior. And we also will see in the following verses where it's mentioned that this child who died had been an enemy of the king in a previous life and had taken birth as his child and died at a young age as a way of punishing this enemy from a previous life. So this is the way of karma. You know, if you really hate somebody and you really want to make them suffer, then you take birth in their family. Right? How can you make somebody suffer the most? Do it as a family member, isn't it? Isn't that a fact? Right? Suffering from family is much worse than suffering from friends, which is much worse than suffering from neutral people, which is worse than suffering from enemies. We expect our enemies to give us suffering. But we think our families, they will always be there for us. So there was some kind of karma involved here from a previous life. So she's saying, all right, maybe it's karma. And Prabhupada adds the argument that if there's karma, what do we need you for, dear Lord? What's your function? Karma can go on automatically. And then she says, well, you may say karma cannot go on. Again, she's not directly giving this argument. Prabhupada's inserting this. That you may say, well, karma can't go on automatically because that's just matter, and matter needs some sort of controller. Okay, fine. But by controlling in this way, you're cutting the ropes of affection. Sneha Pashaha. She's saying the reason we take care of our children and our family, the reason we do our duty is because of Sneha Pashaha. We do our duty because we feel affection. And you're cutting this. In fact, this is said elsewhere in the Bhagavatam that due to affection, parents take care of their children. It says everyone is captivated by their children. Right? And especially, I think, when it comes to children. I was talking to my granddaughter the other day. And she has a one-year-old son. And she says, my son is like a very high-maintenance pet. You know, and little children are a lot of work. They're a lot of work, they're a lot of sacrifice, they're a lot of trouble, and they're not particularly grateful. Generally, little children are not especially grateful. They generally have a sense of entitlement. They tend to be very demanding. So, she's saying, well, the only reason we take care of our children is because of affection. And if you cut this affection, then people will neglect their children. So you don't know what you're doing. Now, practically speaking, we all know that our children can die at any moment. This is not some surprising thing. And I don't find that that knowledge cuts the tie of affection. You know, I don't think she's making a very sound argument here. We all know that everybody we love in this world can die at any moment, and we love them anyway. We don't say, well, I don't know why I should love you. You can die tomorrow. So I don't agree with her argument here. But her argument, you can see, is based on a very fruitive mentality. That she's thinking, the reason that we're going to have affection for our children is because our children will live a long life and they'll do many wonderful things. And so we're thinking that our investment in our children is going to pay off. That we'll get to enjoy them and they'll contribute to society, and therefore we invest in them. And if we thought that that won't happen, then why would we bother? Why would we have any interest in them? So, of course, she's not considering that people can take care of others for a higher purpose. And perhaps she's not considering this because they were all guilty of not taking care of each other for a higher purpose. All these people in this story, they were only taking care of others if it was in their selfish interest. The king was just taking care of the queen who had the son. The queen was, the Kritaduti was so absorbed in her son and her husband, she neglected her co-wives. And the other queens were so absorbed in how their husband was treating them that they didn't take care of their stepson. And none of them were thinking about the kingdom. So for all these people, we could say, yes, if you weren't getting anything out of it, you wouldn't do your duty, because that was exactly where they were at. They were doing their duty only if it gave them some mental and physical satisfaction. Otherwise, they neglect. I mean, not only did they neglect their duty, they actually committed murder. So for such people, it may be a fact that without the bonds of affection, they're not going to take care of anybody. So this is the Atmavan Manyate Jagat, that we see everyone else like ourselves. Well, I only do something if there's something in it for me, so why would anybody else do something if there's not something in it for them? But, of course, this is a very core argument of the Bhagavad Gita, that we should not do our duty just because there's something in it for us, that we should not be attached to the results of our duty. We should not take our responsibilities just because we feel some affection for someone or just because we have some guarantee that that person is going to live to be 100 or just because other people are being nice to us. But we should do our duty for the pleasure of the Lord. And it's up to Him what are the results, if there's success or failure, gain or loss, victory or defeat. We should do our responsibility for His pleasure out of surrender to Him. And when we do that, then we are above the law of karma. And then what happens to us is no longer the result of some material laws. We are reciprocating with Krishna and He's reciprocating with us. But one cannot understand this if one is stuck in selfishness. Therefore, Prabhupada says here, that nobody can understand the subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the Supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. So she's using logic. She's also basing her logic on scripture. But we have this famous verse from the Mahabharata that Mahaprabhu quotes, Tarko pratishta strutayo bibinna, nasav rishir yasya matam nabinnam, dharmasya tatvam nikitam guhayam, mahajanayena gita sapanta. If we try to understand the world through logic, as she is trying to do, we'll find that every logical argument has a counter-argument. And then for every counter-argument, there's another counter-argument and another counter-argument. I was in the debating club when I was in high school, and one of the things that I learned very quickly is that you will never come to truth in that way. You know, we were trained as debaters to debate either side. So any argument, we were trained that we could produce arguments and defeat our own arguments and defeat the defeat of our own arguments and defeat the defeat of the defeat of our own arguments, and that any argument that anyone presented on either side could be defeated. That was one of the things you learned, that if you knew enough sources, if you had enough, you know, this was the expertise of the art. And you just could not come to conclusive truth in that way. And then the scriptures appear binam. They may appear to contradict each other. And Krishna says to Arjuna, for those who've been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And then he says, who cares about honor and dishonor? Be detached from this honor and dishonor business. So that appears very contradictory. And Arjuna keeps asking Krishna, well, you're telling me Buddha Yoga, and then you're telling me to fight. You're telling me give up all abominable actions, then you're telling me to fight. So the scriptures may appear contradictory. So if we really want to understand why we are suffering and how to get free from suffering, then Mahajano Yena Gita Supanta. We have to follow the path of the Mahajanas. And what they do is they surrender. They say, Lord, I can't figure this out with logic. I can't figure it out just by studying the scriptures. I can only figure it out by surrender. And Prabhupada says twice here, he's quoting the Brahma Samhita, Yasvendra Gopa Matavendra Mahoswa Karma, Bandhanu Rupa Palabhaja Namata Noti Karma Di Nirdahati Tintu Subhakti Bhaja. That whether you are the great Indra or you are a little insect, if you surrender to Krishna, then these things are no longer applicable. And we can think of this again logically. The people in this story were acting very fruitively. Therefore, the laws of fruitive action applied to them. If you act as a fruitive person, then the laws of fruitive action will apply to you. Like if you go play football, then the rules of football apply to you. If you're not playing football, the rules of football do not apply to you. It's just a very simple thing. Yes? If you say, I am going to go play football, then there are rules. You have to follow those rules. But if you walk away from the field, you say, I'm quitting the game, then those rules do not apply to you as you are walking home. So if we no longer act for our own sense enjoyment, subtle or physical, all these people here, they were acting. Everybody, this is clear to everyone. Chitraketu was acting for his own sense gratification. Kritaduti was acting for her own sense gratification. The queens who murdered the child were acting for their own sense gratification. They were not acting for the good of others. They certainly were not acting for the good of the citizens. They weren't acting for the good of others and their family. They were not acting for the good of the citizens, and they certainly were not acting to please the Lord. So therefore, they came under the laws of karma. And therefore, the person who was their enemy in another life came back to give them trouble. And there's nobody to blame for that other than themselves. But she's wrong. We can have affection for others, even if they might die tomorrow, if that affection for others is coming from our affection for Krishna. I think all of us in our lives, we deal with other living beings, yes? And if we see, it's Krishna who's asking me to deal with this living being. I'm taking care of this living being for Krishna. Even they may be a family member. But whether it's, okay, I'm in charge of the brahmachari ashram, I have to take care of these other brahmacharis for Krishna. It's like if you're sitting outside and there's a young child and the mother is there and she says, oh, I need to use the toilet. Can you watch my child? How carefully will you watch that child? Honestly, you will probably watch that child more carefully than if they were your child. Like the maidservant in this story, she was completely devastated that the child died under her care. If we say to somebody, you know, my son, my sister is going to come to Ljubljana, can you show her around? Right? Just imagine someone, good, very good friend of yours, calls you and says, my brother's coming to Ljubljana for the first time. He wants to come to the temple. You would take so much care, yeah? Oh, this is my friend's brother, my friend's sister. We should see like that. My husband, my wife, my son, my daughter, my mother, my father, the other devotees. They don't belong to me. They belong to Krishna. And Krishna is giving them to me for some time. It may be 1 minute only. It may be 2 seconds. This is true even of the person we pass on the street. Well, I like to take a walk every morning to get some exercise. And I don't know, today there were so many people in the park. I guess because it's a weekday, I don't know. Usually there's more people on a weekend than on a weekday morning. So many people walking and running and bicycling through the park. And I'm also thinking, anyone I pass in the park, Krishna has put me next to this person. You know, I was chanting japa, so I didn't want to talk to anybody. And anyway, I don't think most of them speak English. But at least I could smile at them. How can I deal with this jiva to please Krishna? Or like Prabhupada says, when you pick a flower from a plant and you offer it to the deity, that plant will take birth as a human being. So I was picking flowers for my deities also. On the way back, there's this plant and it has these purple flowers that are so fragrant. When I put them on my altar, the whole room becomes perfumed for the whole day. But how do I treat the plant? That's also a jiva. Say, thank you for giving me these flowers. Your flowers are going to go to Krishna. I hope you will be happy. We can have affection for the plants, for everyone. to please Krishna. And if we do that, then we're not fruitive actors. Then if that person, the person we are taking care of, if they're nice to us, they're not nice to us. Because some people we will take care of will not treat us well in return. Yes, we all have this experience. I take care of someone, I sacrifice for someone, I do a lot for someone, and in return they are simply not there, or maybe even they are cruel to me. But it won't matter, because I'm not doing it for them, I'm doing it for Krishna. If my relationship with them lasts 3 seconds, or it lasts 3 years, or 30 years, it doesn't matter. I'm doing it for Krishna. There's a story I frequently tell. This is a true story. So there was this one Jewish rabbi who had 2 sons. They were older than Chitraketu's son. I think they were our teenagers. And they were great scholars, very gentle. They were very loved by the whole community. And one day when the rabbi was out teaching, both of his sons contracted some disease and died very quickly. Now there are some diseases that kill one very quickly. And when he came home, the sons were already dead. So his wife met him at the door. And she said, "My dear husband, sometime previously a merchant was traveling through this town and asked me to watch 2 jewels for him until he returned." So in former times, there wasn't necessarily banks. Like it said, Rupa Goswami, when he renounced, he deposited gold coins with a merchant. And he told Sanatan, "You can go there to get the coins." So people would keep their valuables with friends or with a merchant. So she said, some merchant came and gave me these 2 jewels, and today he came and asked for them back. And the husband said, "Well, you must return them." So this is the mood of the devotee. Even my children, Krishna gives, Krishna takes away. They're his. And they don't belong to us. My pleasure is not in enjoying my children. My pleasure is not in enjoying my spouse. My pleasure is not in enjoying my friends. My pleasure is how much is Krishna pleased by my behavior. Now you might say, but what about the great lamentation of the devotees when another devotee departs? But that lamentation is not for their sense gratification. Machita magita pranam borayantas prasparam katiyantastumam nichantu shanti charamanticha. So the devotee, they lament when another devotee dies simply because in that devotee's association they were feeling so much Krishna's presence. But that is not a lamentation for their sense gratification where they are blaming Krishna. And once we surrender to Krishna, we immediately understand all these things. It becomes immediately clear. What we cannot understand with logic, what we cannot understand just by memorizing the shastra, as soon as we act in surrender, we understand. And Prabhupada says here, if we understand, then we are immediately free. Right? Mamcha yovya vicharina bhakti yogina sevate sagunan samatit jaitam brahma bhuyai kalpate. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes, Prabhu.
Saying a verse related to this ashram, to this sneha pasha, not of attachment in eighth chapter of first canto. And there she is praying for cutting the knot of attachment. And in commentary, Srila Prabhupada is saying that if you read the verse, it looks a bit cruel, strange desire to cut this knot of attachment towards family members, but he's saying that this is actually not possible, to nullify the emotions towards other living beings, but that she is praying for cutting the knot of attachment based on skin relations.
Yes.
So affection remains even greater, probably. It's a commentary, not so I'm just asking if you can add something.
I'm so glad you brought this up, and hearing you, I'm thinking I could have given a completely different class. I thought I could have given this class on the comparing Krita Duti to Kunti. So I hope next time you go through the Bhagavatam and the next person who speaks on this verse, maybe they'll think of that. And the fact that you brought that up reminds me of when I teach people how to give class. I always say that as far as I am convinced, in every verse and purport, there's at least 200 main principles that you can find to speak about. So you found a different one than I chose. And I really like that you brought this up. Do you know, does she use the same word, snehapasa? The same term. How fascinating that is. That is absolutely fascinating. So here Krita Duti is criticizing Krishna for cutting the snehapasa, and there Kunti is asking him to cut the snehapasa. Ah, very nice. It is interesting, Srila Prabhupada in his, it's not in the purport, it's in the class on that verse, which is in the purport to teachings of Queen Kunti. So if you look in the Bhagavatam 1.8, it's not there, but if you look in teachings of Queen Kunti, it's there. Where Prabhupada says, seeing in the darkness is not seeing, seeing in the light is seeing, and the real relation is soul to soul via the super soul. And what Kunti wants to cut is this false fruitive thing. Because look what happens when you have this false fruitive thing. You become crazy like these people. They've all lost it. All of them. I mean, the other queens lost their intelligence so badly, they murdered a child. Krita Duti's lost her intelligence so much, she's blaming God. You know, and Chitraketu, Kwitadu, they're all like we would describe. They're slipping and falling. They're crying. Their clothes are coming off. They're completely lost their intelligence. And that's what happens if you're bound. Sneha pasa. Pasa is a rope. What is the Bhagavatam also called? Ridaya Grantha. It's this knot in the heart. And all it does is cause us suffering. I mean, when Chitraketu was told his child will cause you suffering, he thought, well, he'll be the only child of the king, he'll be spoiled, and maybe I'll suffer that way, but at least I'll have a child. Now, what a fool. Our suffering is not due to the things that happen in our life. Our suffering is due to our attachment. Our trying to force things to go the way that we want them to go. And we should all want this cut. Sarva padi vinir muktan tat paratena nirmala rishikesha rishikena sevanam bhakti ruchite. You're asking, that's another definition of pure devotional service. So what is it that's making us suffer? It's these upadis. Things have to go this way, they have to go that way. You know, something's not happening the way I want it. I have to fix it now. And make it the way I want it. And it is that mentality that causes the suffering. So yes, it definitely more affection. The affection that the pure devotees have for each other. I mean, you read the song, Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. What a song. If I don't see you, it's like I'm being bitten by a poisonous snake. You know, that I told you I'm reading now in the end of Anchalila. Mahaprabhu's having these lamentations. He's reciting these verses of Radharani in lamentation. I can't see you, Krishna. Anyone who hasn't heard Krishna's ankle bells, Krishna's flute, Krishna's voice, they might as well be deaf. How will I go on without you? I mean, deep, intense. So intense. And I notice you have the cows around Gornitai. I'm thinking Gornitai don't generally take out the cows. But there was one time, of course, here's Mahaprabhu worshipping him in his Grahastha Lila. But in his Sannyas Lila, there's one time in ecstasy, he goes among the cows. Right? He goes into this ecstatic trance of separation. So what intense! And they have that for the devotees. the song Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, it's describing intense attachment for another devotee. That's very similar to what Mahaprabhu is describing with Krishna. It's practically parallel. And what is, right, when Ramananda Roy asked Mahaprabhu, what is the greatest suffering? Right? Or is it Mahaprabhu asking Ramananda Roy? Mahaprabhu asking Ramananda Roy, what is the greatest suffering? And Ramananda Roy says, the greatest suffering is? Yes, to be separated from the devotees. So I like to tell the story how in 76, when we were meeting with Prabhupada in New York, and our oldest son, who was about 1.5 at that time, was sitting on my lap. And Prabhupada was talking to my father, and he pointed to me, and he said, just like this mother is loving her son without expectation of return, one should love Krishna. Now here we see Kritajuti and Chitraketu, they had some expectation of return. Hare Krishna. And my father asked Prabhupada, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? And Prabhupada said, no, loving Krishna will help her to love her son. So, yes, when we establish relationships with each other, that this is another soul, this is a devotee, even someone who's not acting as a devotee, Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadasha, they're ultimately, they're a devotee. If we establish our relationships on that platform, then there's a rope of affection between us and the Lord that is very beautiful. Like it's described, you know, Krishna's relationships with the gopis is like gold, and the relationship between ordinary men and women in the world is like iron. So there's still a rope binding us to the Lord and to the devotees, but it's like a golden rope. It's not a chain. And in Madhava Mahotsava, at the end, so Radharani's crowned the queen of Vrindavan, and she looks at everyone and she says, my blessing to all of you is all of you who are bound, you can be liberated. And immediately her friends begin to cry. They say, we don't want to be liberated from your service. We want to be bound. So, thank you. That would have been a really nice class. I missed it. Tomorrow. No, tomorrow I have the next verse. I could connect it. Not really. I'll think about it. But the next verse is different. Any other questions or comments?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
A little controversial topic in these days. You mentioned this flower offering to...
Oh, you're going to talk about cows.
How do you know? Can you enlighten us?
I was right, right? You're going to talk about cows. I don't know if I want to go there. I'm not sure if I want to go. Usually I go...
Briefly.
Usually I go head on into controversial topics. But, I mean, when Prabhupada was here, we were buying milk from the shop, and certainly, you know, our philosophy is if the cows give their milk, that they're benefited. If the trees give their flowers, they're benefited. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada told us to have our own farms and take care of our own cows. So both are true. I think that if we start saying, you know, one is more true than the other, they're both true. And it's part of our mission to try to stop the slaughter of cows and make sure that cows are protected. That's part of our mission. I do think that there's some, I mean, my academic specialty is in motivation. So I did my doctoral thesis on job satisfaction and motivation. So it is a fact that if we just buy commercial milk to offer, our motivation to take care of cows is not so great. You know, there's that saying, if you can buy milk in the market, why keep a cow? I mean, that refers to something else. That refers to if you can have a girlfriend without taking care of her, why have a wife? That's the understanding. But that's, yeah, if you can buy milk in the market, why keep a cow? And so that fact may be pushing us away from wanting to have farms and taking care of cows. And I think that that's the main argument, that as long as we go on supporting the slaughterhouse industry with our buying of dairy products, that we lose our impetus. Because having a farm and taking care of cows is a big deal. I remember when GBC many years ago, 13 years ago, said, I want to start a school. So I have a prepared paper, how to start a school. So I printed that out. I gave it to him. So he's looking this over. He says, oh, this is much more complicated than building a guest house. So it's like that, you know, taking care of cows. I mean, I was in one city temple where the temple president, in the middle of the city, like this, and the temple president wanted to bring some cows from India and keep them in a garage and take them for a walk up and down the street like a dog. So, you know, I know people who take care of cows. I have some very close friends who take care of cows. Some of them take care of cows like a pet. You know, they don't, which Prabhupada was not really, you know, Prabhupada cautioned us, if you don't milk the cow, if you don't work the bull, then eventually you'll think they're a burden and you'll want to kill them. So the people I know that take care of cows responsibly, it's a huge job. You've got to milk that cow twice a day. You've got to train the bulls. You know, you've got to keep them clean. You've got to keep them healthy. You've got to give them healthy food. It's a lot of work. And it's, you know, it's something like having a child that doesn't grow up. You know, taking care of animals like that. And, you know, they live for a long time. You're looking at 15, 20 years commitment. So we can understand why people don't want to do that, and especially if we have a city temple, you know, to establish a farm somewhere. Just like we established Gita Nagari, which is like a four-hour drive from New York, and it was connected to the New York temple. So we were supposed to be bringing all the dairy products to New York, but it was a four-hour drive each way. You know, it's a little hard to maintain that. That kind of... Because Prabhupada was saying we could have milk products on the farms and we can bring it to the city and we can use it in the restaurants, you know, but that implies that the farm has to be like not more than a 20-minute drive. So I understand that if we buy commercial milk, we're not going to want to take the trouble. And if we don't buy commercial milk, maybe we'll want to offer Krishna milk products badly enough. But then what a lot of devotees do is they say, okay, we'll just be vegans. So giving up buying commercial milk does not push them to starting having, you know, cow care programs. It just pushes them to giving up dairy altogether. And Prabhupada talked about the benefit of cow's milk for our brain, particularly the fat in the cow milk. Our brain is like 60-70% fat. And the kind of fats we eat directly have an effect on how our brain works. Plus, Krishna likes milk products. I mean, it's not just a question of putting little, you know, cow figurines on the altar. But he actually likes milk products. So my personal take on this is something we talked about last time I was here for several hours. And that is getting a vision for society. Because we see practically that when the official legal entity ISKCON runs farms, it's rather problematic. I mean, I'm sorry to say, we don't have very many good examples of the legal official organization, ISKCON Running Farms. Am I correct? Yes. We have a few good examples, but mostly we don't. And I've been very closely associated with a number of ISKCON farms. The track record is not good. You know, you end up having like 20 cows just eating grass and giving cow dung, and nobody does anything with them. Yes? Yes? Is this the hard truth? So to have cow protection really means to activate the devotees or the non-devotees who are Vaishyas by nature and who are that subcategory of Vaishyas that they are interested in cow protection. Not all Vaishyas are interested in cow protection. Some are interested in running a bank. Some are interested in running a clothing store or a restaurant. It's not that every Vaishya wants to take care of cows. So it's a question of activating those people within our society and outside our society who have the natural inclination to take care of cows and guiding and facilitating them. That's what we should be doing. And we should be doing this with everybody according to their nature. On the positive side, there is a movement in society in general away from animal slaughter, and it's increasing. Among people in general, there's a growing interest in moving away from meat, yes? Especially with young people. People are starting to understand that meat eating is bad for their health, it's bad for their karma, and it's bad for the planet. So we do have more and more people who are open to this concept. Are we finding those people who have that nature and helping them to start some sort of ahimsa dairy? So Sitaram Prabhu has been working on this in the UK for many, many years, trying to make an ahimsa dairy economically viable and working with non-devotees to create, you know, economically viable ahimsa dairies. I don't know of anyone else doing that. I mean, there may be someone else doing it in Brazil or something that I don't know about. And I also know some devotees who started their own ahimsa dairies on their own, as their own private business. And some of them are very, very successful. So I'd like to see us, you know, encourage that in society. But we definitely should be, we should be trying to move towards that and trying to move away from indirectly facilitating the slaughterhouse economy. I mean, I don't think that that's, I think that's kind of, everybody would say, yes, we shouldn't be supporting the slaughterhouse economy. But how to do that in a sane and reasonable way? And this comes from vision. You know, I don't see any way to escape it. It comes from a vision. And I have to also say, frankly, that I hear very, very few of our leaders talking about having a vision for society. Very rare. I hear it from Bhakti Rasayan Sagar Maharaj, but not from very many other people. And I was at a leaders meeting not very long ago in America where I was saying, you know, we need to have a vision for society as a whole, and people said, oh, that's too impractical. So that's my take on it. And please don't use these controversial things as an excuse for Vaishnava Parad. That's not a very good idea. So please, whether you drink milk from the shop or you keep your own cow in your backyard or you're a vegan, please don't commit Vaishnava Parad. That's much more important than where you get your milk from. You know, and we're not going to attract anybody to a Krishna conscious lifestyle. We're not going to attract anyone to ahimsa dairies if we fight among ourselves and offend each other over all these little things. know, that's not. If we want to have all the dairies in the world be ahimsa, let's be ahimsa to the other devotees first. Sometimes, you know, you see a guy, he treats the cow better than he treats his wife. You know, he's petting the cow and he hits his wife. So that's not going to be very good. Was that all right? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.